Hi, everyone. Well, first of all, let me just get started. You know, thanks for closing out the day with me. I always know how these conferences, at the end of the day, your energy's low and you kind of start to be like, right? So thank you for taking the time and finishing out this wonderful conference. The other thing is, you know, I flew in last night and I wasn't able to attend the first day, but I just have to say that the second day has been such a wonderful experience for me. We were kind of, various of us have been talking during the breaks and just having, I love how this is a smaller, more intimate setting where we can get to know each other and network and just, you know how it is, often you're the only woman or one of very few that you're working with. And so just having that female energy for a day, it's revitalizing. Okay, so, you know, there was a little bit of a theme about brand, and it's kind of a hot topic right now. And for me, when I think about this, I feel like it's important to talk about it not just in terms of what you're portraying, but also where it's coming from. And so that's sort of the history behind this discussion. My name is Terrell Cox. I'm a principal group program manager at Microsoft. I've been there for 15 years, give or take. Most of my career was spent in Redmond, although a little over a year ago, I moved out to Cambridge, to the Cambridge, Massachusetts location, Microsoft New England Research and Development, affectionately called NERD. Aha, yes, a few of you know it. And I work as part of the server and tools business unit in Microsoft. The group that I manage, we deliver technologies around application and settings virtualization. We also deliver scenarios for PC and mobile device management. So that's kind of the area that I'm coming from. My background at Microsoft, the vast majority of my career, I've been working more on server and now cloud technologies, more on the infrastructure side. And that is a great fit for me, because I really like that, I like the messy, hard technical problems, you know? I like figuring out how do you take something that's really complex and make it engaging and sexy, right? Okay, so before I go much farther, I need to start with a confession. If you read the abstract, there's words in there that sound pretty highfalutin, things like reputation and values and, you know, credibility and things like that. And the confession that I have is that this journey for me was started for purely selfish reasons. And I think if you've ever seen Blazing Saddles, I think Madeline Kahn really sums it up pretty well in the song number that she does. I started on this journey because I was tired. I was just exhausted, you know? And like we've been talking about the donut hole and, you know, I reached a point where I was one of maybe two women working on projects. Often I was the only woman working in the groups that I was in. And I was surrounded by this group of role models who were different from me. And I was showing up every day at work trying to emulate these people that I had a lot of respect for. I viewed them as successful leaders, and I was like, okay, well, that's how you be successful. And showing up every day and trying to take on this work style, this communication style, these behaviors that were not natural to me was wearing me out. And I also felt like a fraud. Let's be honest. I felt like a poser. And the last thing you want to do is spend, you know, 12 hours a day of your life pretending to be something you're not. And it was demoralizing, and I was going to become one of those statistics. I was right on the verge of becoming one of those women that just checks out and leaves the industry. And I didn't want to do that. So I got to thinking. I was like, all right, I got to do something different here. I started on this journey of really trying to understand, like, what is it that I need? What is it that I need to bring? What career do I really want to have? Okay. So, if you're going to have a discussion about brand, you kind of need to level set as to, you know, personal brand, and then really the concepts come from product brand. So what is a brand? And in a nutshell, it's basically, you know, a product brand is what is that product and what does it stand for? But when you're thinking about personal brand, it's essentially who are you and what do you stand for? And you don't want to just have any old brand, you want to have a great brand, right? So think about, like, I just picked out four. These are sort of easy, but these are kind of icons of American, very, you know, long-lasting, long-running brands. And what really sets them apart? They're simple. They have a consistent message over time. I mean, the golden arches of McDonald's have been pretty consistent for decades, right? They're instantly recognizable. People look at it, they size it up, and they're like, yeah, that's Coca-Cola. I know what that's about. And then the other thing is that a great brand really resonates with the audience. So what do you think about, well, what does that mean for me? It takes craftsmanship to build one of these brands. It takes a lot of work, right? And when you think about it, okay, all right, great, I want to build a great personal brand. That is a big undertaking. And we need to think about it in terms of how we pace ourselves for that, right? So I'll talk about that in a minute. Let's do a couple of examples of how do you apply brand concepts to individuals. And you can't talk about brand without giving a shout out to Steve Jobs. I mean, arguably the finest brand manager in modern history. And I know I'm coming from Microsoft, but you gotta say it. So when you think about Steve Jobs, he was a brand in and of himself. Right? And what do you think of when you think of Steve Jobs? You may think of other things, but these are kind of some common ones, right? Technology, innovation, there was a personality dynamic there, right? Kind of a demanding, mercurial personality. Design, clearly, got to call out design. But like, you understand what I'm saying, these are kind of the qualities and characteristics that leap out at you when you see his face. Here's another fun one. Oprah, like, what do you think of when you think of Oprah? There's kind of that health and wellness piece. There's storytelling, hello, Oprah's book club. There's this human spirit piece, champion of the human spirit. And this last one, that one's straight from her website, Live Your Best Life. When you're thinking about building your own brand, what does that entail? Because I'll bet you anything, Oprah's got a whole staff of people who are helping her build her brand. And I don't have a staff of people. And I certainly can't make it my full-time job. And so what I would assert is, in the words of Mark Twain, the best brand is the one that really represents your true self. It's the one that really that conveys what truly matters to you. It doesn't take a whole lot of energy to tell the truth. It takes a lot of energy to keep track of the impressions that you're giving off and the messages that you're trying to say and keep track of the lies, if you will. So what I'm going to talk about today is sort of that journey that I went through to figure out what really matters to me? How do I represent that to others? How do I name it? And what I've found in my own self and with the folks that I mentor is that, you know, you think to yourself, wow, well, I know that I have values and that I'm an ethical person and all that, but when you actually start trying to name these things, it's hard to find the right words. You're like, oh, well, that and this too, and yeah. And so one of the things we're gonna talk about is, like, how do you get centered in those things that matter most to you? And I love how we did a little bit of this in the workshop before, because I was like, okay, cool, we're sort of gonna segue nicely into this. So when I talk about brand, I have to start with, like, the things that when I first started grappling with this, I think the first step for me was thinking about reputation, which I learned from my mama. I was born in Alabama, I call her mama. So, you know, and her message to me, especially when I started reaching maturity, was, are you sure you want to wear that out in public? I mean, you look gorgeous, honey, you really do, but do you really? Is that what you want to give off? You know, and then other things too, right? That might be a little more superficial, but other things like be careful how you treat people in front of others, you know, because that will signal to other people how you want to be treated, whether or not that person deserves respect, and what you're made of as well. And so I think the first step, especially when I was in high school, was kind of this notion of reputation. What am I putting off? Once I got into college, I think I started grappling more with issues around reputation versus character. And this quote from Abraham Lincoln is so nice, right? Because the real thing's the tree, right? And then the shadow, that's your reputation. And so I'm going to share with you a little example of kind of one of the things that I was dealing with. That's Tillman Hall at Clemson University. That's my alma mater. I was in the physics department there. And you could probably imagine there weren't a whole lot of women in the physics department at that time. There are actually a lot more now, I've been really pleased to see. Anyway, so I was an undergraduate, and there was a teaching assistant who took a liking to me. And I think maybe he thought he was courting me, but what actually ended up happening was he was stalking me. Would corner me in the hallways, call me up all hours of the night, show up at my apartment, things like that. And I told him over, I'm like, I'm not interested, this is not what I, you know, no, thank you very much, we aren't even friends, please leave me alone. I'm dating someone, like the whole thing, right? Kept going. And to the point where I was scared, right? So I went, I talked with my advisor, I told him about the situation. I ended up talking with the assistant head of the department, spoke with the head of the department, physics, spoke with the dean, actually, at one point. And consistently, the message was, boy, you know, he just doesn't have very good social skills. You should cut the guy some slack. I'm sure you misunderstood. Yeah, like over and over and over again. I was getting nowhere, and this was escalating. And it was, like I said, it was making me scared. So what ended up happening was, it just so happens that I was actually on the staff of the college newspaper, and I wrote a regular column. And I was like, all right, well, that's it. I'm going to put this, take this into my own hands. And I wrote a column about it. I didn't name names, but I said, basically, this is what's going on. Described the interaction that I had with the professors, and published it. Boy, howdy, did I get called into a bunch of offices after that. Woo! And I had answer for it, like crazy, you know, and I basically worked up the hierarchy, you know, and just was completely interrogated. How could you do this? Do you realize what a reflection this is on the department? Do you realize what you're doing to this poor guy, who actually was at least 10 years older than me, by the way, you know, and in a position of authority over me? Do you realize you're ruining his career, blah, 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 right? Got all the way up to where I get a phone call from the president of the university's office. He wants to meet with me. And I'm like, oh, no. You know? But I knew in my heart I had done the right thing. And it took a while for it to get all the way up to the president's office. So this is a couple of weeks later. And surprisingly enough, the TA didn't mess with me anymore after I published the article. So problem solved, right? Anyway, so I go in and I meet with the president of the university. I am a wreck. I'm just like, because I feel like I've been under the microscope the whole time. So I walk in, and he's like, so did all those things that you wrote about in your column actually happen? And I said, yes, sir. And he said, I assume that when you told the faculty about this, that nothing changed. And I said, no, sir, it didn't. And he said, since you wrote that column, has it stopped? And I said, yes, sir, it has. And then he smiles, and he goes, good for you. And I was like, oh, thank you. And then we had the loveliest conversation. I mean, just wonderful man. Ended up forming a friendship, if you will. He was like, you know what, I want to get to know the students better. I'd really like it if we could get together regularly. He ended up writing me a letter of recommendation when I started my job search. Just to this day, I am grateful for that. And so for me, it was kind of this distinction, right? So in the eyes of the physics department, I was a rabble rouser. I had ruined this poor TA's career. That was my reputation. But my character was something deeper. Okay, fast forward, I'm at Microsoft. Skipped a few years, but I'm at Microsoft. And there, let me see, what am I talking about? Okay, so I was doing well, I was getting lots of new opportunities, and one of the things that I was grappling with early in my career at Microsoft was kind of this, I just didn't fit in very well. I was working in a very technical area, and the way I would describe myself, I am far more of a right brain thinker. I'm a non-linear thinker, even though I have a science background, and you know, I'm well trained in scientific method and logical thinking and representing that. The way I get to the truth, if you will, or answers is often more intuitive. And then I circle back around and work through the logic and the data and represent it out and validate it, right? And this was difficult for me because most of my colleagues, most of the people I worked with, were more linear thinkers than I was. And they were struggling with what the heck to do with me at times. But I felt supported because my manager and my skip level manager, they saw the results that I was getting and they were trying to give me new opportunities. So one opportunity that I had, I had a real passion around, like I mentioned, kind of taking complex technologies. And I always kind of had this feeling that what's the point of building something if it's not going to come to fruition? Like if nobody's going to use it, what's the point of it existing in the first place? And so I got this passion around user experience. And we had this product that some of you, if you've been around, may be familiar with, but it was around patch management. And just the experience on it was really, really bad. And so I was brought in to help out with that. And actually, the general manager had requested that I come in and help out the team. And so we had gone through, we were doing a lot of iterative design on it and working really collaboratively. It was just a great group of people to work with. And the general manager was like, this is super important. I want to have eyes on it. So we would do regular reviews with him. Okay, his background was he was a programmer. He had never spent much time with customers and just didn't have a lot of natural empathy for how people were using the products. And so we're in this one design review and we're going through and we had done a lot of work to really streamline the workflow and to make it more intuitive and just to make it generally map more to the way we had found customers use the product. And he's like, no. That's not the way to do that. People need to be able to make all those decisions. They need to be completely hands-on and recognize the trade-off decisions that they're making, you know? And he basically took these streamlined workflows and was adding a whole bunch of extra steps to them, a lot of extra complexity, and pushed back every single step of the way. And I got really frustrated because one of my values is around people first. And I felt like he was, you know, he was undermining our customers, you know, and I just got kind of mad. And I looked at him and I was like, look, if you want me to design a product for you, that's fine. Just let me know, you know. But if you actually want me to deliver a product that our customers are going to use and appreciate, then let me do my job, right? Well, my boss is in there. My boss's boss is in there. My boss is like, her jaw literally dropped a little bit. And the general manager, he looks at me and laughs. And he's like, okay, fine, right? And so like coming out of that, I think I was able to establish a reputation that I was gonna speak out on the things that really mattered to me. But as I mentioned, I still had this issue of I didn't fit in. I was kind of the square peg in the round hole sort of a thing. And luckily I got the opportunity to do some leadership development training. And it was this thing called Leadership Challenge. One of the exercises that they have you do is going through and understanding what are your values. And the wonderful thing that helped me here was by actually putting a name to the things that motivated me and that were priorities for me, I think it was easier for me to kind of have these discussions with my managers who were supportive and wanted to help make me successful about what are the things that I thought, you know, the things I was more interested in, things that better showcased my strengths. So I highly recommend doing this. You don't have to just get that deck of cards. Honestly, you can go up and do a search. I, of course, use Bing because I'm from Microsoft. You don't have to. But if you just type in something like personal values list, there are a lot of these that are available online. Some of them are already nicely formatted such that you can print them out and cut out and do your own cards. But the way you do it is you play it literally like a card game. So in this workshop, we sat at a table, there are four or five of us, you deal out the cards, everybody gets five cards. You put the discard pile and the remaining pile of cards in the middle, and you play. And the goal is you keep playing until you get the perfect five. Like, these are the perfect five for me. This describes exactly what matters. And you can say you want to scope it to for your job, but I personally prefer to just do it. I like to be the same person at work that I am at home, so I like to just say what are the five most important things. I do this with my mentees as well. I found that it's extremely helpful when you're trying to decide, like, imagine you've got a couple of different opportunities. How do you decide which one is right for you? Getting centered about those things that are deal breakers for you is really helpful. Also, when you're kind of in that moment in your career where you're like, I don't know what to do next, this can often help unstick you. So these are my five. I figure, in the spirit of transparency, allow me to tell you. And those are pretty fuzzy, aren't they? They're kind of warm and fuzzy and maybe feminine. But they really are important to me. Self-realization is important to me. I feel like I'm on a journey, and I'm always learning, and I want to realize my full potential. It's also important to me that I do this for others. When I manage a team, it is more important to me that I help you be successful than that, you know, I get my dollars worth out of you, you know? Love for me, this is love for my family, love for my friends, love for my customers, this is people first. A key component to love is respect, very important to me. Freedom, this is freedom of expression, freedom to be myself, freedom of opportunities, and I really like to give this to others around me as well. It's important to me that people have the space to be themselves and express themselves freely. Elegance, this is, I spent some time as a design director, a director of design, and this is about elegant solutions, right? This is about finding those really lovely, simple solutions to complex problems. And I think there's a resilience to elegance as well. And then the last one is perseverance. If you know me, some people say I'm stubborn or bullheaded, maybe tenacious, but I think perseverance sounds nicer. So, and I think it implies success. You know, stubborn doesn't always imply success, and success is important to me too. All right, so I got that, and I'm talking with my manager about these things, and it helped. You know, I think I got new opportunities that I might not have otherwise when I started talking about things like, look, it's important to me to be able to do this kind of problem solving or to, you know, work with teams in this way. And so they're coming to me, and they're like, hey, you're doing pretty well. We'd like to give you some more opportunity, but what do you want to do? You know, what is your career path? Where do you want to be in 5 years? You know, have you considered management? And I really didn't know. Up until that point in my career, I spent most of my time more exploring. Like, I'd get curious about a new technology or a problem space or whatever, and I just sort of go do that. And I get into it, and then, you know, I'd either finish that work and move on, or I'd get bored with it and try something else. And so my career path wasn't straightforward. We were talking earlier about how it can be kind of circuitous sometimes. I was just trying different things. And I didn't know what to say, and it was actually becoming to the point where I felt a little embarrassed that I didn't have a, like, this is where I want to be in 5 years answer. But I didn't actually have to answer that because I had a baby instead. So I bought myself some time to figure this out, and I took a breather, and I took my maternity leave. And the first day back on the job, I go in, I leave my baby girl, I go into work. God, that day sucked. And I get to the end of the day, and I'm driving home, and this is kind of the view, similar to the view that I would see as I drive home from Redmond to Seattle into the sunset, right? And all of a sudden, I got that flutter in my stomach that you get, like, you know how it is when you first fall in love with someone, and you haven't seen each other in a while, and you're going to see them, and you're all like, the anticipation and the excitement and the you know, oh, I can't wait. And that was how I felt. I'm getting goosebumps. That was how I felt about going home and holding my daughter in my arms again after being away for a full day. And it hit me. I was like, holy crud, I need to get my act together because I was in a different place then. Whereas before it was sort of, yeah, I could try a bunch of different stuff, this, that, and the other. I had something so much better to do with my time outside of work all of a sudden, something that I would rather be spending my time on than, you know, sitting in meetings forever that didn't necessarily go anywhere. And so I realized, I was like, look, I have got to get more clear about where I'm heading. And so this quote from Helen Keller, I think, is pretty inspirational. I was seeing a lot of things, but I had no vision for where I wanted to go. But what I did have was, I had actually spent a fair amount of time in the feature areas that I worked on, and the products that I worked on, writing value props and vision statements for my pro- projects. And I was like, wait a minute, I know how to do this. You know, I should just do that. I treat my career as my project, right? And for me, it kind of unstuck me from where I was, because I felt like focusing on my career was somehow narcissistic. And I just had this kind of emotional block to actually investing in myself that way. It felt selfish and, you know. But when I started thinking about it as this is my project, then I was like, all right, well, what are my requirements? You know, what are the priorities here? What are the things that I'm real, what are my goals? You know, and I could actually lay it out. And so over the years, I've written my personal value statements. I've revised them. I've worked with mentees to do this. And this is my quick and dirty formula for it. When you think about not a product vision statement, but a personal vision statement, at the end of the day, a great one, because you don't just want a sucky one, you want a great one. This is a theme. It's about what are your career aspirations? What kind of impact do you want to have, right? It's not just about the aspiration, it's about getting it done, right? What is the desired experience? So I feel like aspirations and impact, that is what you want to do. But then it's also important to talk about how is that going to feel for you? What sort of environment do you want to work in? And then what are your needs? I think that, you know, to stereotype freely, I think often women fall into the trap of where we put ourselves kind of at the bottom of the list. And if you're not clear about what you need, no one's ever going to help you achieve it. You're certainly not helping yourself do it. And so it's important to capture those as well. So my little process for this, start off by just writing up some lists. What are the things you're good at? What are the things you're truly passionate about? What are the things that you want, your desires, and what are the things you need, right? And like I said, treat this like a project. Don't treat it like, oh, this is the most important thing to me ever, because you'll get too emotionally connected to this. But I think it's, I want to highlight the piece around passions as well, because think about it. If you could spend your entire job working on those things you were truly passionate about, wouldn't that be a kick-ass job, right? So you need to make sure that you're focusing on that too. All right, so then you write all that down and you say to yourself, wow, what if I had every single thing on that list? And then you describe that, okay? And what it ends up doing is it's actually kind of a simple writing exercise, because you got your lists and you weave it together into a little bit of a story. If you're like me, just a quick tip, I had to put an asterisk here. So, you know, some people they kind of start in the middle or at the bottom of an idea and work their way out to something bigger. I'm one of those people where I kind of take an outside view in. And so I found that I was getting myself stuck because I was getting a little bit too outside the bounds of reality. And so I was like, well, I could do anything, you know? I mean, I could like quit my job and dedicate myself to solving world hunger, and like that would be, you know, I got a little too grandiose, I gotta be honest. And so I put some constraints around myself. I was like, look, I just had a baby. I genuinely enjoy being in this industry. I've got a good job at Microsoft. So, all right, within the confines of, I'm gonna stay at Microsoft, I'm gonna stay in my field, what does this look like? Okay, so this is what I came up with. Not the first time around, I iterated on it, but this is the one that I wrote in 2007. And what's interesting is, so Microsoft has an annual performance review cycle, and as part of that, I would go through and I would revisit my vision, my personal vision statement, and see, like, am I on track for this? Like, how's that going? And what I found was once I got it to this state, I actually changed it extremely. I did very little changes to it for about 5 years. I was like, yeah, that's it. So just to kind of call it out, it was important to me to play a leadership role. I wanted to be kind of one of those subject matter experts. I wanted to be a go-to person. I wanted that credibility. I wanted to work where I could really empower a team and bring out the best in others. I wanted to define and deliver. I'm not satisfied if I'm just part of imagining something. I want to see it actually happen. For a vision, a lot of the work that I had done up until then was more about execution and delivery, and I wanted to focus on what are the big ideas for the future. For me, I had done a fair amount of work on front-end systems, if you will, and so the user experience and working in the IT pro space was a personal passion of mine. I wanted to work on strategy. At that point, I was junior enough to where I didn't get to do a whole lot of that. And I was like, wow, that would be cool. I should do it. Build a community, a collaborative team. And then the last two phrases are more about, like, this is the experience I want. I do want great work-life balance. I am a wife and a mother, and I want to be good at that too. And I threw it out there. Okay, so, in the words of Grace Hopper, it does you no good to go through all this work and identify your personal values and write a personal vision and not share it with anybody. So once you figure this stuff out, what do you do with it? You put it out there. I shared it with my manager, I shared it with my mentors, I shared it with my friends, my husband, of course, close colleagues, and they helped me iterate on it. Not only did they help me refine it and get it to a point where I felt really good about it, but they also opened doors for me. Because I firmly believe at the heart, people want to help. You know, if you put something out there and you say, this is what I really want to do, people are like, hey, I can help you with that. You know, and so just having it there and present in front of people made a difference. And so having that clarity of vision back in 2007 led me to this group of crazy looking people. this was my old team. And we like to dress up for Halloween together. That's me, I was Wonder Woman. I do have a soft spot in my heart for Wonder Woman. And anyway, so it was, let me tell you how I got started on this journey. So my manager, my skip level manager, I had shared my personal vision with them. In fact, my skip level manager, she helped me iterate it and kind of, hey, have you thought about this piece? And you know, I know that you like doing this kind of work, and so it helped me refine it. So years go by, I had taken another job and I was working in a different area of the company, and she calls me up. And she's like, hey, the group that I'm in, we just had a reorganization. There's this position that's opened up that's managing program management, design, and user research. And we are going to own the user experience for Windows Server and System Center. Do you know somebody who might be interested? And we were talking this morning about the imposter syndrome. I was so fell in this trap because I thought she wanted me to use my network to help her find someone to fill that job. I was ridiculously naive. And she was really clear that this job was, you know, one, two levels above where I was at. And so I heard that. And so I was like, oh, okay, well, I'm not qualified. It didn't even occur to me. And so I was like, well, I might know so-and-so or whatever. And she had this disappointed sound to her voice. And the next day, a guy who worked for her, who was a friend of mine, calls me up. And he's like, Terrell, you idiot. She's offering you the frickin' job. Would you call her back? And I was like, Oh, okay. Yeah, that would be awesome. I would love to do that job. So I got the job. And I worked there for like 5 wonderful years. When I started, it was only 16 people. By the time I left, it was, you know, 45 growing to 50. We started out working on a couple of products. By the time I left, we were working on, gosh, I think it was 12 products. And just the opportunity to be able to bring together a cohesive experience across all of these different products focused on the IT professional. This is like a dream job, you know? So because I managed a design team, and I like to take the skills that I use at work and apply them to my career, what I realized was, okay, well, if I'm going to have a personal brand, I need to do a better job of articulating it. So I made a mood board. I don't know if you're familiar what those are, but designers use them to articulate kind of what is the emotion that I'm trying to convey here, what's the overall design direction, and it's kind of a collage of different pieces that represent where you're heading. And so this is me. Let me see, call out a couple of things. I think ballet is a great metaphor for what I enjoy doing because it's this wonderful juxtaposition of something that is technically difficult to accomplish. It's hard work, and when it's done well, it is graceful and elegant and beautiful, and no one has any idea how difficult it is, right? GTO, I have a soft spot in my heart, especially for the convertible because that was my first car, but to me it represents freedom. Right, and power, and you know, and the wind blowing through your hair, and you can do anything when you're driving that car. You know, there's this piece around self-realization and being centered, and of course my family right in the middle. I've got the Porsche there, which to me really represents great design. I've got my technology corner. I have the shoes because I like to run and work-life balance and health is important to me. And like I said, I like Wonder Woman. A couple of pieces on design and collaboration. The Border Collie, what's my next slide? Yeah, I'll tell you the story, then I'll go to the next slide. So the other thing that I think is really important is, all right, so you figured it out, right? This is my brand. This is what I'm portraying. This is the essence of what matters to me and what I'm about, what I stand for. You gotta check in on that because you might think you're portraying something and actually those around you are seeing something totally different. And for me, I definitely would seek people out and get feedback from them. Hey, here's kind of what I'm thinking. What am I giving off? The other thing that's really useful is there's a whole set of online resources. There's actually a couple of sites where you can do a survey. And so you go through and you fill it out. And basically what they do is they pick out, like, what are your leadership characteristics? What is your work persona, if you will? And then you have, like, your manager and your colleagues at work fill out the survey as well, and it will give you these handy-dandy reports that give you a comparison. And one of the things that came back and surprised me, but then I had to just embrace it, was the Border Collie. So one of the things that people saw in me was that I was good at kind of bringing people together and herding them in a direction, and that I had a lot of energy about doing that. And at first I was like, oh my God, they're calling me a bitch, you know? I'm like, great, just when I needed a dog reference, you know? But then I was like, actually, the reasoning behind it, I was like, you know what, that's true. I do love bringing a group of people together to accomplish a goal. And, you know, when I get excited about my work, I bring a lot of energy, so I gotta own that. So it's on here too. So this piece around checking in, I think, is important. So great brands evolve over time. They stay relevant, they stay current. They change when they need to, and your personal brand will too. You're gonna change. And this, you know, quote from Benjamin Franklin is really nice there. I think it's important to revisit it. And one of the challenges actually, I mean, you could call it brand management, if you will, is when I would go through life changes and my values would change somewhat. You know, my priorities would change. And I would actually bring that into work and kind of trying to, you know, shift my dynamic and how I was showing up. I'd actually say I got the harshest feedback from my coworkers when there was a disconnect between what they perceived me as, because I'd done a good job of being very consistent about who I was, and when I tried to make a change. And that's okay, you just kind of need to manage through it sometimes. And what I actually found was that it helps to come right out and name it and say, look, you know, I'm kind of going in a different direction now. All right, so let me see. Did I forget to tell y'all anything? I don't think so. Okay, so this is my call to action. We talk a lot about personal brand, and I think a lot of times what people think about it as, you know, I need to do a better job of projecting, or I need to do a better job of, like, walking the walk and talking the talk. And I just can't get too excited about that because I think it needs to come from within. And I also know that it's hard to do. So my call to action for y'all is put pen to paper, write it down, and just figure it out. Because once you do this, number one, I think it's fun. Hopefully you will too. And number two, once you have it figured out, everything else gets a whole lot easier. And it's a lot easier to embody things when it's present at the top of your mind, what matters to you. So, that's it. Thanks. How did I do? Hey, we got time for questions. That's not bad. I actually cut like a bunch of stories because I was getting so long-winded. Anybody want to share or have a question? Please.
So what if you're talking about list your strengths, passions, desires, and needs, but what if, let's say, your objective reality is not matching what you want to be, for example? Like, you know, 5 years plan, but it's might unrealistic. What should one do?
Well, I think the place I would start is Are you putting an artificial barrier in front of yourself? How unrealistic is that aspiration of yours truly? Maybe it's not unrealistic, but maybe you've got the wrong timeline in mind. If that's something you really truly want to do, and you don't necessarily have all of the skills or strengths to back it up, but that's your passion, well, take the 10-year plan. That's okay. You'll arrive there, and you'll learn a lot along the way. The flip side of it, though, honestly, so like for me, what I found was I kind of got stuck on the unrealistic for a little while, and I kind of had to pull back a little bit. I think the other thing is it's a good idea to take a look at your life and what are those things that you actually can change right now, because you don't want to beat yourself up with some lofty goal and then hold it over your own head and set yourself up to only be depressed. So also take a look at your life and be realistic about, okay, well, you know what? These are the things I can change now, and these are the things that are just going to stay steady. And write this in the context of that. And then you can change it later. That's okay.
And one more question. When you're talking about personal brand, is it something material or something that is like thoughts or something? Like, do you have, let's say McDonald's had a representation of brand, it's their stores, their logo. As a person, what should you have? LinkedIn? Facebook? Or
Okay, I want to say yes. And then I also want to say don't get too hung up on it. So done properly, your brand is naturally conveyed through your communication. And so if you do Facebook or you do Twitter or you, I don't know, like any variety of things, you could be old school, you could be really into journal writing, I don't know. I think it's more about making sure that you are representing your brand consistently through the mediums that are comfortable to you. I think when I think about, like for me, one of my personal values is freedom. And so one of the ways that I like to embody that value at work is I like to wear what I like to wear. And so some days I like to dress up, and other days I like to wear my crazy t-shirts. And I like the freedom to be able to do those things. And so I think there's lots of different ways you can express it. Other thoughts? Yeah.
First of all, thank you for sharing that, because talk about, like, you see your peer, you see all the success you've achieved, and then you hear about, like, feeling back at the end and realizing we're all human, we are through some pretty interesting stuff. I don't know, next time.
Yeah, I got some stories, let me tell you what. Well, no, the dean never was supportive. Now, the president of the university was supportive. Gosh, that's a really good question. I guess the thing that I would say, and he actually was only a temporary president. He was interim, so he was only ended up being there for 2 years. But kind of the president before him, and then the 2 years that he came on, I do feel like he affected kind of a cultural change in the university that was less focused on, before he joined, it was very focused on the numbers and the fundraising and how much money was being brought in, and you know, and there wasn't a lot of heart to it. And I feel like Dr. Prince was far more focused on, you know, I want the students to love being here. And I think that he did bring about some of that change in the short time that he was here. So I gotta give him credit for that, for sure. Did he go in and like raise hell in the physics department? No. But I graduated. I graduated with honors, and it worked out. They didn't mess with me after that either.
I have one more question regarding personal brand. Well, as a program manager, you're probably conducting interviews, right? For candidates. professional brand? Because I mean, we all have to apply for job freedom. Companies care about it.
Yeah, that's funny you would bring that up. I do have a set of questions that help me understand, or at least I think, I want to understand what motivates people and why they're interested in the job in the first place. And not so much as a, are they a good fit or not, but more of a, if I hire them, I want to know whether or not I can, how I can be a good manager for them. And so I do, it's not so much part of the screening process as it is like just fact finding, if you will. I think that, actually, I would say when I'm hiring people for management roles and leadership roles, I do pay attention to their personal brand because I think that's part of their leadership and it's important that they be able to lead others, and part of that is how are they showing up. So I do pay attention to it in those roles.
Check their Facebook and LinkedIn?
Sometimes. Yeah. Have any? Oh, go ahead.
Anytime you have for a job these days, someone's probably going to Google you.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
For sure. That's where you start, right?
Yeah, well, I mean,
you Google them, I Bing them. You go up on LinkedIn, right? You check that, check Facebook, and you kind of do the basics, and then you go from there.
Mm-hmm.
Compare against the resume? Yeah, I definitely know people who are like that too. The folks that I know who are like that, they attribute it to privacy. And they really feel like it's kind of compartmentalizing their life. They don't want there to be a bleed over. And the other thing too, I guess this is a gross generalization, but the folks that I know who are like that are very introverted as well. And so I think that it's kind of this is my private life. You know, I go into work, I suit up, I show up, I'm putting on my game face, I'm at work. And when I'm at home, this is my safe, you know, this is my safe world. And I don't say that it applies to everyone, but the folks that I know, it's like that. I think for me, I am a private person in that there are certain things that I don't necessarily feel like I need to share with people I work with. But in terms of, you know, my personality and what motivates me and what my priorities are in life. It's just, I make sure that that's consistent. Yeah. I think you kind of have to do what works for you. But like I said, for me, it's just too much work to separate it out too much. I'd rather put that energy towards building great products, honestly, or hanging out with my daughters. Yeah. Wow, that's a really good one. Honestly, that is an issue that I have truly grappled with because one of my values is love, and I get very personally invested in people on my team, and I'm working with them on helping them realize their full potential, and that's, you know, I get very attached to folks, and it is hard for me when it turns out that, you know, they're not doing very well, or they'd be a better fit in a different role, or those sorts of things. And over time, what I have had to do is to be a little bit more clear in my own mind about, you know, like, it's not appropriate for me to be thinking about my personal attachment to them right now. I'm here to do a job, number one. And then the other thing that helps me as an emotional person is that at the end of the day, would you want to be in a job that you weren't truly effective at, right? I wouldn't. I'd want someone to tell me. in fact, I would be downright pissed if I was not working up to snuff and my manager didn't give me the full scoop on that. And so I basically kind of turn it around and go, look, the way that I show them respect is by helping them be better at what they do, and take it, like, it's my duty to do that. And so that's how I basically keep it congruent. Yeah. Did that answer your question?
Just applying the distract moment to discussing.
So yeah.
There was a point I raised earlier, you know, topics like this. So I was just wondering what your opinion
is. Sure. I have to confess that it does tear me up inside. And I will have trouble sleeping at night while that's going on and stuff like that. But
prior to this, people have easier to manage. If you had your personal, the way you're personally different to the
yeah.
professional.
And you sort of shut
easier,
it off.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I this totally resonates, but you know, the hardest thing as a manager or an advisor or anything is letting people go or telling them graduate school is not for them or one of those. And you know, I just echo exactly what she said, which is that it is personally hard and painful and terrifying and it tears you up. And the silver lining is that whether it's a week later or a month later or a year later, when you really see the proof that it was in fact the right decision,
yeah.
every time I've gone through that, it is totally clear that it was the right decision. And the hardest part, once you've done that a few times, the hardest part is just knowing that the person you're telling is going through pain and they don't know yet that it's the right decision.
Yeah.
But there's this, after you've done it a few times, you realize that they too will get there and it will all be good. But it is, if you're this kind of person, it is really, really hard.
I think the other thing that just occurred to me from what you were saying is the other thing that I try to do is, especially in a work environment, is to take the emotion out of it. Because at least the more it is, hey, these are the expectations, this is what we need you to deliver, these are the skills we're looking for, this is what we're trying to demonstrate, here's how where the gaps and differences are, you're not a bad person, you know? Like, we like you. I mean, it's not a judgment on a personal level. It's more of a, look, these are what the gaps are. Here's how I can help you do that. Do you think you can actually get to where we need you to go? That helps as well, because I think people's natural inclination is to internalize it and feel like it's a reflection of their personal worth. And I think the more you can help them move past that and view it as more of a technical challenge than a judgment of their personal self, it's easier for both of you. Yes.
So you were talking about this conflict with your supervisor.
Uh-huh.
So how it was ended? Was the project successful or not?
Oh yeah, I should have told you about that. Yeah, it ended up going really well. It made a difference. It made a big difference. The adoption rate went up dramatically at that point. Now, I mean, I look at it and I, of course, see all the warts in it still, right? But it did have a big impact on our customers, and it ended up being the foundation for another product that spun off of it, and the design paradigm was what we did. So, yeah, I was pretty proud of it. End of day. Any parting thoughts? My thoughts on Windows 8 usability. what do I want to say? What? Oh, 8.1, yeah. You know, I feel like the Microsoft made a huge bet with Windows 8, and when, you know, we were all dog fooding it, right? We were all using it before it came out, And I got to be honest, I mean, across the company, we were nervous about it because it's such a dramatic departure from previous versions of Windows. And it was interesting the way the leadership in Windows would talk about it because they were embracing it. They were like, look, this is a big deal. It's okay to be nervous about it, right? And people will have a learning curve, but there was just a real spirit of, it's time for us to do something big. It's time for us to reinvent ourselves. It's time for us to take a new approach. And so in that sense, I'm always energized and excited to see a huge company take a big risk and actually go for it, because you just don't see that very often. So I gotta give them credit. All right, the other thing that I would say is that it actually does a good job on what it was designed for. It was designed for a fairly narrow scope of scenarios, and it was really designed to highlight touch first, have a very fast and fluid interface. And so if you are using it on a slate or on one of the convertible laptops, it works. I really like it. But what, of course, they found in the feedback from customers is if you are using it on other forms of hardware, it's not as great of an experience. And so that's something we just have to work on. That's the great thing about software. You get to do another version. but I'm really proud of it. And I, given my design background, I have to say, we can't call it Metro anymore, but the Windows style design, I think it's beautiful. I mean, I love the bold colors and the crisp lines and the putting the typography first. I'm such a geek. I love typography, and so like seeing that as a core design principle of what we're doing at Microsoft now, I get very excited about it. Did you have something? I saw you standing up. Oh,
especially
this better be good.
Especially when you're that upbeat right now.
I
have a dark take on a lot of this.
I wouldn't worry about it.
Yeah. Well, it affects other people's mood too, maybe. I have kind of a dark take on a lot of this. I think I am one of those people you were talking about a while ago who forms different selves and presents them in different contexts.
Yep.
And refuses to be sort of factored down to one. I'm also defensive in certain ways, and I want to explain that to you. Just as we have this common phrase that the best technology does not always win, and
yeah.
You know, really fine stuff, beautifully designed, and something else determines the market.
Sure.
And people who worked on it and believed in it are redeployed or laid off. And you did a nice job, Margot, describing, you know, the decisions you have to make sometimes to let someone go or say you're not for this graduate program or whatever. That when companies downsize and they do it that way and they make good judgments, I respect them for it because they need to for the market. But when they do it willy-nilly and arbitrary or play favorites,
yeah,
or they don't like somebody at the top and everybody good and bad below gets axed and they start losing homes, okay, it
yep.
hurts. And so, you have expressed, I'm reading this into you, but very close alignment between your personal sense of self and branding and then who you are on the job and what motivates you on the job.
Yeah.
So your personal description looked a little bit like my performance goals for the year, I'm sorry to say. I mean, it is that close, and that must really organize your life. It also means you have great confidence in your job position. And that if you were ever just arbitrarily removed from that, it would be devastating to you unless you landed on your feet very quickly or had other internal resources for quickly reframing yourself and saying, that wasn't me that got laid off. That
sure.
was, you know, whatever. You know where I'm trying to go with that. So I'm the kind of guy that is a little more defensive, and so I don't like to put that much of myself into the job.
See.
I like to identify with it and do good work. And people know who I am in many respects on the job. They don't know all of me. And I've watched men die right after they retire because everything was in the job.
I totally
and I see
know
women who
about.
Have a lot of hobbies And there's no one thing that would ever kill them off. They're too busy with other things, you know? And so I've tried very hard to cultivate other things, you know,
it's like makes total
diet,
sense.
Bird watching, whatever. And so I guess my description of myself would be all complicated and a mess compared with your nice neat one. But I don't know about this kind of darker defensive mode that I'm feeling.
Well, I think, let me see. Wow, there's a lot to that. Let me kind of pull that apart. That was actually, there's just so many great things that you said. I think one thing is that you have a clear strategy for how you are integrating your life. And it works for you. And, you know, I think for me, when I tried that approach, it actually became more unsettling to me and more uncomfortable for me. And so for me, it was harder. And I'm not judging the difference between them. I'm just saying for me, it didn't work. That's all. The other thing that I would say is that I feel like we are complex people. And it's kind of, I think what I'm hearing, and I don't know if this is fair, but what I'm hearing is the way you express the complexity that is you, is that you have different avenues of for those expressions. And I think for me, maybe it's more of, I just lay it all out there for everybody, good and bad, which, you know, you could say that it's a little silly, if you will, but for me, it just feels more comfortable. The other thing that I would say is that if I lost my job tomorrow, it would make me sad because I like what I do. But I know the scenario that you're describing. I've seen it in people in my family. And for me, it actually is my defense mechanism to be integrated across my personal life and my home and my work life. Because what that means is that if I lose my job, I'm still the same person. And I feel, I guess I've been through enough challenges, and I always land on my feet, and I have an innate sense of confidence that maybe I don't know what the heck is gonna happen next year, but I'm sure I can make success out of it, whether it's in the tech industry or anything else. And I'll share a story with you. So a friend of mine got called up, and they were recruiting her for a position, and oh my God, it was a great job. I was like, I would totally want to do that job, but they didn't call me yet. They called her up, and it was really good, and it was perfect for her. It was like this great mixture of her experience, and it was a good, like, had great headroom. She would have been able to get promoted several times if she stayed in the role. And she's like, oh, but I'm so nervous, Terrell, because I just don't think I'm qualified for it. I don't think I could do that, you know. And I it's bigger than I'm not ready for it yet. And I was like, are you kidding me? You take that job. I was just appalled. I was like, what? They clearly think you're qualified for it. Why don't you think you're qualified for it? And then she's like, yeah, but I don't know the technology. You'd have to ramp up on it. And I was like, well, they think you could do it. Why don't you think you could do it? And then she looks at me and she's like, Terrell, why is it that you don't worry about these things? And I said, well, because quite frankly, I know what kicked my ass. And it was quantum mechanics. And my specialization was nuclear astrophysics, and man, the first semester I took of that just rocked my world, and I ended up getting a B+ in that class, and I was like, all right, you know, so that's the thing that completely nailed me, and I was like, you've got to be kidding me, because exchange is not quantum mechanics, so, like, come on. And so I think it's kind of knowing what your limits are as well, is a piece of it, too. Yeah.
So I think there are two different things that we said, and I really am glad you said it's very, there's a lot in there.
Yep.
And I think there's two different things, though. One is the having what we'll call this unified as opposed to split persona, for lack of a better term, doesn't necessarily mean that your self-worth is tied up in your job. And so that's why Terrell could say, if I lost my job, yeah, it'd be a bummer because I like it, but that's not about who I am. There's this other part which
I can't help it. It works for me. What can I say?
I tend to fall, I use the term Pollyanna a lot. So, but it's all about finding out what works for you, and there is no one solution.
You know what else you were talking about was when bad things happen at work for bad reasons. And there have definitely been times in my career when I felt there was, like, the values that were happening in the culture and the environment in which I was working were counter to my personal values. And when you are a manager and you're in that situation, it's even worse because you're supposed to espouse the kind of cultural norms and they're counter to what you think is the right thing to do. And those situations were probably the hardest for me. And I guess for me, anytime, I've been at Microsoft for a long time. I worked at another software company prior to that. I've been, I don't know if you know Microsoft a lot, but it's big and pretty much every single group has its own culture and there's some continuity, but they feel really different. And so there will be times where I kind of check in and I'm like, okay, this is a really tough thing that's going on. Have I crossed a line? Like, is it time for me to go find another role? Is this the work environment that is making me act in a way that I can't look myself in the mirror? And if that's the case, then I leave. Or I change it. I've changed it a couple of times too. Depends on how far off you are. But I do know that about myself. There are just certain places, certain decisions, certain behaviors that I simply will not, that's like drawing the line, I will not adopt that. Anything else? Late day. Thanks so much, everybody. Thanks for having me.